Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
A necessity. Welcome. Let's begin.
Greetings. Thank you for joining us this evening on Real Life the Radio Show. This is Brother Ross. We're going to get started today. We just had a couple of technical difficulties. So sorry for starting the show late, but we're going to get moving. Hopefully, our brother Jenna will be able to call back in, and we'll be able to move forward from there. So good night. Tonight is Tuesday, the 24th of July, 2017. And, yeah, we have a live show for you this evening, and we're going to get into some interesting topics of discussion. excuse me. So let's get started into, well, actually, before we do get started, first, for those who do listen to and support the network, please do continue to support by donating to Black Talk Radio Network. Also, if you can, you can also support the network by joining BTR Community. You do have a 30-day trial period where you can actually try it for 30 days first, and ultimately it is a social media space that's closed, created by Scotty Reed for us, in order for us to have conversations amongst ourselves that are unimpeded, and there, because it's not independent, there is a yearly fee, excuse me, once you do get through the 30-day trial period of $24. And with that, you'll be able to speak with other like-minded black people that are providing information that's pertinent to us and the things that we need to know. So there, excuse me, you'll be able to do that. And also, that's another way to support the network and help us to continue to keep Black Talk Radio Network on the air and continuing to do what we do. So thank you for those who do donate, and please don't hesitate to basically support with your financial energy. So we greatly appreciate that. Yeah, just give me 1 second. I just need to pull something up. One moment. All right, so the first thing I'm going to get into is, let me find this article real quick. This one is from AP News, and it's entitled, "From the IMF, Venezuela's inflation is on track to top 1,000,000%. And I just thought it was important because I'd never seen anything like this before mathematically put out there in regards to the situation that's going on with any country, let alone Venezuela. But basically it says inflation in Venezuela could top 1,000,000% by year's end as the country's historic crisis deepens, the International Monetary Fund said on Monday. Venezuela's economic turmoil compares to Germany after World War I and Zimbabwe's at the beginning of the last decade, said Alejandro Warner, head of the IMF's Western Hemisphere Department. The collapse of an economic activity, hyperinflation, and increasing deterioration will lead to intensifying spillover effects on neighboring countries," Werner wrote in a blog post. So basically, it's getting really bad, and they're about to basically be in the same situation that Germany was in after World War II, and they say Zimbabwe was in about 10 years ago. Wow, it's major what's happening with them. Scotty.
Yo, can you hear me?
Yeah, Brother John, are you there?
Yes, am I clear now?
You crystal clear. You got my text?
Yes, sir, I did. You go ahead and do that.
All right, cool. I'll be back in with you, hopefully. I'll talk to you in a minute.
All right, we're gonna get into this. Sorry about the problems, holding up the show and what have you. Missed y'all last week. Greetings, Scotty, first and foremost. Greetings. And well, I was off for a second. Tonight's show, I'm not sure if we got into the preliminaries while I was trying to get myself situated, but if you enjoy the content that you hear here on this network, did y'all go through this already, Scotty? Well, if you enjoy this content, then by all means, donate to Black Talk Radio Network. Contributions, joining the, I see you, Scotty. Joining the social community. But tonight, we will be going over Black self-segregation. The separation that we use amongst each other for whatever reasons, whether it be religion, skin tone, because colorism is very huge around this time frame that we're living in, wealth. We are still getting marginalized and we are getting abused on a day-to-day basis. Roz, I'm going to wait till Roz get back, but this Saturday we'll be interviewing a doctor out of South America, and he was speaking to this same subject, why we continue to chop our own knees off. Now, we get out here and we have these conversations, and they be truth. That's why we have these conversations. Because if we don't know what happened, then we will allow it to happen again with no idea. That's why Brother Scotty created Black Talk Media Network, to counter the propaganda that we get indoctrinated with on a regular basis. So we are here to do the same thing, give y'all news, current events that we think you should be paying attention to, and moving from that standpoint. So we're going to get into the book with Dr. Whiff. His name is Dr. Julian Whiff, by the way. We're going to read some excerpts from the book right along the time when Brother Rice get into the to the video. Scientists finally know what dads it cut off on me. Scientists finally know what dads do for their kids. That's an interesting article. So here we go. It comes from fatherly.com. This intensifies for all of us Black people, or whatever you designate yourself. To start the article, children with involved fathers are less likely to break the law, drop out of school, gagged by close relationships with their dads. These kids disproportionately, grow up to avoid risky sex, pursue healthy relationships, and hold down high-paying jobs. They're unlikely to become homeless or rely on welfare, or more likely to have higher IQ scores than their peers by age 3. Longer term, they suffer from fewer psychological problems and may be less prone to obesity. When fathers are actively involved with their children, children do better. Paul Amato, a psychologist who studies parent-child relationships at Pennsylvania State University, told Fatherly, "All this research suggests that fathers are important for a child's development." Now, we don't even have to, that's just the beginning of the article. It's actually a pretty interesting article, but we all know what roles our fathers played. You know how important they are. If you didn't have one growing up, such as myself, I mean, I knew my father, but, you know, that's another story. And we know how important they are for how we think about stuff as we get older, if we did have them. Brother Scotty is a testament that has told that story on air several times. Me, myself, I see the difference with my children. And we always get scrutinized as Black men, particularly, even though we're not even close at the top runnings of being away from our children. But we see this, especially us that grew up through the 80s, because I'm an 80s baby myself, so I'm only speaking from my perception. if I had had my father there, it could have been better. But that depends on so many things. But there has been a constant and consistent effort to take us as black men away from our children. They said a long time ago, destroy the black power structure. Who I believe that was Reagan. You correct me if I'm wrong. We got to get rid of the power structure. And what ended up happening is the separation of the black family. To go on to the next one of the next articles that Brother Rives had posted, we was talking about a couple weeks ago was this the Green Book. So he pulled up the Traveling While Black. Now this is a book that you can I'm pretty sure you can still get this book, but we still have the same issues with the where we can't stop certain places. Me myself here in Tennessee, there's a lot of sundown towns, and as time goes on, we have learned to ignore and allow. Now we see this on Facebook all the time, five people not to know where they don't need to be. And every time some of these things happen, it's because they was in a place that they probably shouldn't have been in. Me, myself, I've done that before. Luckily, I'm here, meaning that I got a second chance. And a lot of us that's listening right now have that same experience, being in a place you shouldn't have been in. But this particularly pertains to being hung, dragged, and nowadays jailed. Unofficial sundown towns. Where if you get caught in that area, you either gonna, as Brother Scotty would like to put it, some slave catchers are gonna put you back in slavery, or they will murder you. Plain and simple. And I think sometimes we forget to make that known to our children. Not that we don't always know, but when is the right time to start introducing that stress? Remember, because that has to play a part in this whole issue. When you tell your children about these things, it changes their psychology. They look at things different. So when is a good age to not let your child be a child anymore, to where they have to think about certain things that you think of? These are just questions, no specific answer needed. But you have to think, though, because this is happening to 8-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 16-year-olds, and up. So I think just sometimes we have to emphasize these particular facts about the bigger issue that we see. We see the murders, we see the killings. They getting real loose with the lynching us. And of course, number one, putting us into slavery so that we could work for free. So we see that all the time. But some of those underlying issues that we don't uphold to, it's those places that you go. So that was just my take on that particular article. Let's go through some of these other articles Brother Rice put. The IMF, Venezuela's inflation on track to top 1,000,000%. It has went up 1,000,000%. Brother Dave talk about this on Tando all the time. And the signs have continuously come. These tariffs, you know, we inflating a little bit too. Nowhere close to that, but to your incident where I'm feeling this in real world right now, them tariffs. They keep on bringing Venezuela up because we are following in their footsteps. And unlike Germany, there's not many people that's gonna hold up the United States. So those tariffs, I build trucks, and these tariffs they have put a shortage on our parts because we use steel and aluminum. It's the biggest contributors to these tow trucks that we build. And here's the play right here, is that we tell y'all about these things because you need to know what's happening when it's happening to you. Nobody at my job knew anything about any of this. You know, they still putting it on for Trump right now. And that's why we see these people calling police on all of us. It happened to me a couple weeks ago. So they putting on for Trump, and none of these people even know any of this about the tariffs, the shortage. My job can't get no steel or no aluminum, but they constantly want the production as if the materials was there. So I decided to ask the owner and the head guy who run the region. And they didn't take me off to another room, but they took me from the rest of the group to have this conversation. They looking for stuff because they can't afford to buy the steel or the aluminum like they used to. Got to find a new contractor, a supplier, excuse me. And this stuff is happening everywhere. We all need to be paying attention to this, because the gas get a little higher. If you drink milk, the milk is getting a little higher. It's slowly devaluing, just like Brother Dave has been telling us. And some of us been watching it, some of us haven't. We're in a dangerous time. And every time they get mad, a lot of us end up dying. Keep that in mind. Riz also wanted to go over the psychology with the sleep scientists warn against walking through life in an underslept state. So let's get into that, because I don't even think I didn't even check that out. That's very interesting. We was talking about getting our correct amount of sleep a couple of days ago. Now this comes from, excuse my fault, it lost me for a second. It doesn't even, you know what, I don't even want to read this. It doesn't even have a author. We let Brother Riz handle that. I don't like that. Next article he has is Wi-Fi devices increase mercury release from dental. I can't pronounce that word. But we have to pay attention to our mouths. I'm going to let Brother Riz get into that too. This is the last article I'm going to get into right here. And it's five food medicines that could possibly save your life. Now this comes from wakeupworld.com. Five food medicines that could possibly save your life. Number one on the list is garlic. And it goes, with the increasing prevalence of multi-drug resistant bacteria and the future of the conventional drug-based model to develop effective solutions against them, none accepting responsibility for creating them, spices have regained their once universal reign as broad spectrum infection fighters. Excuse me, I lost my place. And this goes back to the turmeric, lemongrass. Brother Riz always telling us about the essential oils. Now these actual spices, basil, all of these do specific things. Number two on this list is honey. Bees produce a wide range of therapeutic substances beyond honey, but this sweet sticky stuff that we all love to dip our paw into occasionally is the most well-known and most occupied consumed of them all. And for good reason. It tastes great. But did you know that this sweet treat is one of nature's most powerful healing agents as well. Here are just a small few of the applications. Aspirin-induced toxicity. Honey coats the delicate lining of the stomach, preventing aspirin-induced lesions and bleeding. I didn't know that. Bacterial infections, burns, dental plaque, ulcers, and herpes-related ulcers. Okay. I didn't realize honey done all of that. I know that my daughter has allergies, and we make sure that they keep honey so that they could get the surrounding pollen that's in this area. And I know one of the stories that we all done heard is that the bees are dying off. That's one of those agents that we wouldn't have anymore. Apples. Apples is number three. Number four is sunlight, which we all need because a lot of us are short on vitamin D3 because we always at work. And number five, one of my favorites, turmeric. So those was the five food medicines that could possibly save your life. Now, what I want to do right now, Brother Scotty, if you will, because we're right here at the top of the, at the bottom of the hour, if you'll go ahead and play that first video, or did Brother Ross post it in the chat? Let me go over here and get this. I want to play that first video that he had. Let me grab. Matter of fact, can you hear this? Okay. Okay, I thought y'all could hear that. Let me cut this off and I'll go ahead on and send this to you right now. I gotta fix my cord. Okay, isn't it? All right, here you go, Brother Scotty. My apologies. And there we go with the if you can see that video right there, you play that video for me, Brother Scotty. Brother Scott, are you there?
I'm Teresa Clark. I was born in Los Angeles, California, to an African-American family. And this year marks 20 years that I've been living, working, and traveling on the African continent. Thank you. It's been my privilege. I've spent most of that time in South Africa, where I lived for several years, and where I have dual citizenship. About a decade ago, I started spending time in Nigeria, and now I spend about, yes, I knew this crowd would like that. I spend about 3 to 4 weeks in Lagos every year now. And I've also traveled to about 25 countries on the continent. About 3 years ago, as was mentioned, I left my investment banking job and I founded Africa.com, where I am the chairman and the executive editor. And I have the responsibility and the privilege of guiding the way 3 million people from over 200 countries around the world see Africa every month. Our best product is something we call our top 10. We curate the news across Africa. Our editors read everything in Africa and globally. and we decide what the top 10 stories were for that day or that week. And then we summarize them, and we give you a link back to them. So please check it out. You can see it on Africa.com. You can sign up to get it pushed to your email. It's all free. So come visit us on Africa.com. So before I start, I want to tell a little story. How many of you have gone on a cruise? Have there people in this room have been going on cruises? Let me see by hands. Raise your hand if you've been on a cruise. There are a lot of people who've been going on cruises. All my African friends all of a sudden are going on cruises. It's a huge market now. Africans on cruises. And so they have these new cruises that go along African coasts. You know, it used to be that you had to go to the Caribbean, you had to go to Mexico to go on a cruise, but now they have these great cruises, and some of them are themes. They've got jazz cruises and R&B cruises. They've got cruises that have Afro-funk and all kinds of hip-hop music. And there's this cruise that goes down the east coast of Africa, and it's wonderful for Africans. They really understand their market. They've got food that's hot and spicy to please the African palate. They start up in Kenya, in Mombasa. They go out to the Seychelles. They come back to Tanzania. They hit Zanzibar. They go down to Maputo. Then they go out to Mauritius. They come back to South Africa, go to Durban, and end in Cape Town. What a fabulous cruise, right? So this cruise ship was coming back from Mauritius towards South Africa. And on its way, the captain noticed that the ship was taking on water. And so he decided to protect all of his passengers. And he made an announcement over the PA system and said, everybody go to the deck and prepare to board the lifeboats. Everybody was very frantic. They moved to the deck. They were ready to board the lifeboats. And then the PA system went out. So he sent his number two down to tell the people to get into the lifeboats. And the number two goes down, and he comes back, and he says to the captain, I did it, but no one would listen to me. And so the captain says, okay, you stay here, man the helm, I'll go down. He goes down, he comes back 5 minutes later. His number two said, well, how did you do it? He said, well, I had to explain to people what it meant to get into the lifeboats. So for the Kenyans, I explained that it was traditional. For the Ivorians, I explained that it was fashionable, fashionable. For the African Americans, I told them that it was an order from Barack Obama. And for the Nigerians, I told them that if they got into the boats, they could make money. So this is a little preview of what I want to talk about. That which divides us and that which unites us. I'll tell you a little bit about what I think we should be thinking about and questions that I ask myself. Why do we have a continent of 1 billion people, and yet we have such a small voice in geopolitics? Why do we have a continent that is richer than any continent on the earth, and yet we have poor people? Why do we have this incredible diaspora, 200 million people of African descent throughout the world? I mean, that's two-thirds the size of the United States. We have these people as our ambassadors, champions, advocates throughout the world. And yet, we have such a small voice in geopolitics. Let me ask you, by a show of hands, how many of you think that there's a gap between what you know is your potential, the potential of your family, your cohorts, your colleagues, and what we achieve as a collective as Africans? Raise your hand and say aye if you think there's a gap. Okay. Let me ask you another question. When you think about that gap and you think about the diaspora collective, how many of you think that if others in the diaspora possessed more of your skills, your drive, your energy, your enthusiasm, your integrity, your values, how many of you think if others in the diaspora had more of what you have, we would achieve more? Raise your hands and say aye if you think so. Aye, many people. Okay. Well, I've been thinking about this, and I've been thinking about why are these things the way they are. I've given it a tremendous amount of thought. I've spoken to Africans on the continent. I've spoken to African Americans, I've spoken to Africans in Europe, I've spoken to Africans in Latin America, I've spoken to Brazilians, to people from the Caribbean. I had an opportunity to moderate a group of 50 young, dynamic African leaders at the Africa 2.0 session a few months ago. We moderated a conversation about laying out a plan, a blueprint for the future of Africa. We had a fabulous blueprint, but underlying it, there was something that just didn't make sense, something that we knew was going to be a challenge to actually executing and implementing these great plans. You know, you think about what it takes to actually get something done, and it's more than just what's written on paper. There are softer issues at play. There's a need to really think about how you're going to make that dream happen. Why doesn't it happen? Well, it's what I call the diaspora divide. The diaspora divide, the ways in which we divide ourselves. We know the many ways we've been divided by colonialists over time. But beyond that, we own a certain division from one another. We choose to see each other as being very different. This is something that we own. We have wonderful, educated people amongst us who can lay out fantastic blueprints. We know history. We know how the Roman Empire achieved global domination with fewer people and fewer natural resources than we have. But yet, we don't know how to actually make it happen. We need to have a collective and cooperative will. Let's think about what would happen if we bridged that divide. If we were successful in doing so, we would have the opportunity to change our story. Our story at the table of geopolitics and economics looks like this right now. We show up and we say we're a continent of 1 billion people spread out across 54 countries with a lot of poverty, a lot of challenges to executing things. We have these 54 countries which are often ill-governed, and the resources are not wisely used. And by the way, we've got a bunch of people around the world. Oftentimes, they are minorities in the countries in which they live. They are often part of the underclass. Their wealth is less than the average in those countries. And often, they don't have much political power. Now, as Chinua Achebe wrote, if you don't like someone's story, write your own. So let's think about how we can rewrite that story as our own. If we were to come together, and I'm not here as an advocate for the African Union or to discuss African Union politics, but let's for a moment imagine that we're going to let the African Union speak for this collective. The African Union could show up at that table, at the UN, at the World Bank, and say, we are here as one collective force. We have a continent of 1 billion people. We have tremendous wealth. Our wealth commands something like 65% of the world's diamonds, 50% of the world's gold, and 10% of the world's oil. We've got fantastic advocates throughout the world. In Latin America, in Brazil, for example, we have 100 of the 200 million people are of African descent. They serve as our advocates there. In the United States, we've got champions. 14% of the population, 40 million people, they're our advocates there. The Caribbean, we have 75% of the population, another 22 million people there. We're coming to the table as a strong, united force to be reckoned with. Different story, isn't it? Well, let's talk about this diaspora divide. And let me start by telling you a personal story. When I moved to South Africa nearly 20 years ago, I was to run the South African office of a company that did a lot of work with the U.S. government. It was my first week on the job, and I was meant to meet the representative from the U.S. government and to talk to him about how we were going to get contracts from him. We had a lovely meeting. He happened to be a white American. We talked about business, and when it was over, he said, well, I wish you well. Welcome to South Africa. Enjoy the great quality of life that this country offers. I hope you do well in building your company to be significant, this region to be significant for your company. But because you're African American, there's one more thing I need to caution you. don't think that you're going to become friends with the Africans here. You're not like them. You have nothing in common with them. They won't accept you. Don't make the mistake that other black Americans make. Don't think that you're going to have some notion of brotherhood or sisterhood. Don't think you're going to find Kunta Kinte. That's not going to happen. They won't accept you. You're different. Now, by the way, I'll mention that down in Cape Town, there are these people called the Cape Coloreds. You know, they're kind of like the African Americans. You know, they're sort of mixed heritage, and, you know, they don't have any history or culture, and they've got a lot of alcoholism that goes along with it. You might make some kinship with them. Well, I was young. You know, I didn't know how to react. I packed up my things, I said that I had another meeting, and I scooted off. Well, for many years, I've looked back on that meeting, and I've come up in my own mind with a dozen clever things I should have said to debunk his ignorance and his attempts to divide me from my people. Divide. Divide and conquer. We know this is an effective strategy. It's such an effective strategy that computer programmers use this notion. If you have a big program that you need the computer to figure out, programmers have an acronym for it. It's DNC, divide and conquer. They take the problem, they divide it into small pieces so that the computer can better conquer smaller problems than the big one. Well, we know that this doesn't apply only to computers. It has its roots in sociology and how societies dominate other societies. Divide and conquer. Let's take a look at some places where this has been particularly effective. I mentioned Brazil. When we think about the diaspora, many of us don't think about Brazil as being the place outside of Africa where there are more Africans than anywhere else. There are 100 million people in Brazil. And yet, why don't they have a black president? 50% of the population. There are no household names of famous Brazilians that we know, other than one guy who made his fame in soccer decades ago named Pelé. He's the only black Brazilian that I know. The government of Brazil did a survey of its people and asked them to categorize themselves into racial categories. The survey results showed, and this is for the black population, 146 categories. Okay, now we know that there are blacks, people of African descent, and they mix with Europeans, so we could have blacks and mixed race, and that would cover pretty much everybody. But there were 146. Some of them were absurd. One of them was so absurd that it was, when translated from Portuguese into English, it said, "I'm actually 1/8 black, but because I spend a lot of time in the sun, my skin tone would suggest that I'm half black." Absurd. Talk about divide and conquer. They're all fighting with each other, trying to stay one up on the totem pole. What a great way to keep them busy. That's why we've never heard of anybody besides Pelé. Let's take a look at other places where divide and conquer has been effective. And every time I talk about this, I want you to repeat with me the diaspora divide. What happens in Brazil is an example of diaspora. It just goes on and on. There are a lot of Nigerians here. You all know what JJC means. Johnny just come. Those who've been at home divide themselves from those who've been away. The ones who come home, no, they're different. Johnny just come. We divide ourselves in countless ways. I think about South Africans. South Africans talk about going to Africa. It's someplace else. I was in Ethiopia a few weeks ago. There was a soccer match between Ethiopia and the DRC. Someone asked an Ethiopian who won the game. The Ethiopian responded, "The Africans." Colin Powell was criticized because in an interview talking about his African-American heritage, he distanced himself from African-Americans by pointing out that even though he was born in New York, in Harlem, his parents were from Jamaica, so he was different. Another way to divide. We've really got to think about this. The media sends very strong signals. Africans look across the water to African-Americans, and they think that they're lazy, unproductive, people involved in drugs who spend half their lives behind bars. A friend of mine an African friend of mine confessed that when she went across to go to school, her parents warned her from getting involved with that crowd. African Americans are just as ignorant looking across the ocean the other way. African Americans think that Africans are backwards, barbaric, people who are fraught with disease and despair. We really have to look at how we can bridge this diaspora divide. When you look at it, we have more in common than you think. The Minister of Finance from Nigeria was here today, and she started off with a way that got everyone here excited, and that was a common rhythm. That's one thing that certainly brings us together. Madiba certainly understood that, and the whole world danced when he danced. But there are other things, culture, that brings us together. I've never been any place in Africa where there wasn't a deep respect for the elders. There's no part of the diaspora or Africa that doesn't respect elders. We respect those who've passed on. The entire community comes to support, whether you knew the deceased or not. Mothers are important wherever you are on the continent. There are other cultures where fathers may be it, but we honor our mothers. The community looks after children wherever you are in the diaspora or in Africa. The notion that it takes a village to raise a child is translated from Swahili. We often live in places where we don't have social safety nets, and those with means end up being the social safety net. An African or a member of the diaspora with means pays school fees for many children, helps out with hospital bills and in emergencies. This is common wherever you go. And so I ask us to focus not on what divides us, but focus on what unites us. And specifically, I'm going to give you a call to action. How do we do this? One, please, let's all learn more about cultures within the diaspora. It's what we don't know that we accept the ignorance that the media feeds us that leads us to these views. Second, I ask everyone, as a New Year's resolution, reach out to someone elsewhere in the diaspora or across the continent. Get to know someone from another part of our African heritage. And the third thing I ask you to do is to honor the success of those within the diaspora. There's nothing like success to bring us together. I think about a conference I was at in the mid-90s at a conference center in South Africa where on a golf course. And at that time, the golf courses still were being played mainly by whites, and all the caddies and help were black. And I remember that moment when Tiger Woods won his first Masters, and all of the black caddies and staff, they were all African-American. I think about when Alex Weck graced the first cover of Vogue magazine. We were all South Sudanese. I think about when Kofi Annan became Secretary General of the United Nations. We were all Ghanaian. When Barack Obama was elected President of the United States, the texts and emails I got from across the continent, we were all African American. And today, 48 hours after we've lost one of the world's greatest leaders, we are all South African. As we think about Madiba, he's often couched in one of two ways. Clearly, he belongs to his people of South Africa, but he's so much bigger than that. He's one for the ages who belongs to the world. But I'm going to ask this group here today to join me in claiming him, as owning him, as part of Africans and the diaspora. He is ours. He had a quote that I'd like to mention. It's not one that I've seen frequently, but this quote says, "Because there are so many ways that the world is divided in many ways, on many lines, let us use this opportunity to bring us together for a common cause. Bridging the is one such way that I think that we can honor him. Remember, let us focus not on that which divides us, but on that which unites us." Thank you.
Yeah, that was I'm glad Brother Rise brought that up. It was a few things I didn't like with the puns and stuff, but you know, she done that on, well, it was published on February 14th, 2014. Still ringing true today. We've had these conversations about the divide amongst the diaspora. And again, right above Brazil and South America, Dr. Wilf talking about the same things, and he has even more solutions that he says. She said a few different things I want to touch bases on, but before I get into that, Brother Rise has some issues and he may show back up. So if he does, we look forward to my brother coming on back. And if not, we're going to deal with what we got. But that, one of the things that she said is when the boat was going over and how she used different scenarios to save all of the people. I think this one of the things that we don't do. We get too hung up on how things should be done instead of just doing our own thing, agreeing that we're going to meet up at the finish line and continue on what we're doing. We get mad at somebody else because their path is not our path. Small things that cause divides. Like she stated, the blood work, he was 1/8, but since he was darker, the same way we done heard some people say that they don't trust Africans right here on this North American continent. They saying the same things over there. A complete divide. Internal hatred. And we get mad at each other for the simplest things and enjoy to watch another one of our brothers or sisters get brutalized. And I know some of you that may be out there listening, like, where is he coming from with that? But you share all of those death shots, those death videos. You watch them several times. You do that because you enjoy it. Maybe not consciously, unconsciously maybe. Fact of the matter is that you still continue to watch it, to press play. We've talked about the addiction to social media several times, not only on this show, but on all the shows across the board. The reason it's a reoccurring theme is because we have to learn to be able to inject that into our children, to be able to notice these things, to steer away from those type of people. Not necessarily shun them, but you have to understand what you see and how people treat you. Sometimes it does come from an area of self-hate, but even if it doesn't, these are people you need to watch and stay away from. Another thing that she said that I paid a lot of attention to was the stereotypes, like we were just mentioning, her saving all of the people. Is that safe for us? Is that another one of those divides? And I know that she mentioned that, but do we cast blame on other people that look like us because of that? We don't act a particular way, but since they do, they have to be a horrible person or somebody that you can't look at or speak with. You have these same type of issues because of those stereotypes when you go through the grocery store or what have you, when you're in a social area. You see another black person and your face frowned up. Somebody speak to you, hold the door. It's starting to change. But have you ever seen somebody just stand there and stare at the person that's holding the door? These things happen based off of a stereotype. creates friction, and then you have violence. Everything we're going to talk about going to continue to come down to how we're going to treat our children and what we're going to have them to look for, because that separation is there, and it's not only against the Africans, but we have it against our own people who grew up right here on this continent for the same reason: stereotypes. But we're getting to the top of the hour. If you would, Scotty, you'll go ahead on and run that commercial break a little early so we can go ahead on in on this next video. I wanted to get this one in too, because Brother Ross put these out, and I want to get these out before we... It's just about 5 minutes, so we're going to get that one going. You are listening to Real Life. I'm your host tonight, Solo Jenna, and we'll be back after this quick commercial break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Welcome back. If you have any questions or comments about the video or any of the articles that we went through before, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press ** to put yourself in the queue, and we'll be with you as soon as possible. Brother Scotty, did you have something you wanted to add? Excuse me. About the video?
No.
Okay, so we can go right on into this next video right now.
You've heard about the Black Card, right? No, not the one from Visa or American Express. This one is much more valuable. There are entire organizations that have been built upon it, and individuals that have used it to acquire both wealth and influence. If this sounds like something you might wish to own, you should know that there is only one way you can get your hands on it. You have to be born with black skin. That's the only requirement. Really. You can be poor, middle class, rich, it doesn't matter. The black card will still confer upon you an entire history of oppression, even if you've never been oppressed. Flash the black card and most white people will cower. Play the black card expertly and you can win awards, make millions, all the while claiming that the people who got you there somehow hate you. With a black card, you can sell books full of indecipherable prose, because with a card that powerful, who cares if your words make any sense? You can call yourself a civil rights leader and shake down multinational corporations, or you can torch your own neighborhood because you didn't like the outcome of a grand jury verdict. Ironically, the people you might think have the most legitimate claim to the black card refuse to use it. Take my grandfather, for instance. He raised me from the time I was 9 years old. Born in 1941 in rural North Carolina, he started working at age 5, laying out tobacco to dry on a sharecropping farm. Jim Crow, separate drinking fountains, and the KKK were ever-present realities. He was 17 when he married my grandmother. He made a living cleaning homes and office buildings until he saved up enough money to open his own cleaning business. The thing is, he never played any card. Nor did my grandmother. If they had problems, they didn't blame anybody. They just fixed them. And they raised me to do the same. Chores were a requirement in their household. So was reading the Bible every morning before school. I didn't like the Bible readings, and I hated the chores. But I realize now that these small acts of discipline, although sometimes stifling, had a strong, positive impact on my character. I was a first-generation college student. This was supposed to be the ticket to prosperity, but it wasn't. I left college with a mountain of debt and no practical skills. I had just $80 in my bank account and very few prospects. I could have given up. I could have dug deep into my history and declared myself a natural product of ancestral oppression. I could have played the black card and absolved myself of all responsibility for my own stupid decisions. Except I didn't. Because it would have destroyed my grandfather's legacy. I am proud that he had the fortitude to turn nothing into something, and I have no intention of reversing that something back into a nothing. My attitude comes with a price, however. Because if you are born black and you don't accept your natural status as a victim, then the validity of your blackness is immediately called into question. Well, so be it. If believing in myself, if accepting the responsibility for my failures somehow disqualifies me from owning an imaginary card, then let me be the first to declare that I don't want one. I also don't want Cornel West, Al Sharpton, or insert anyone else who uses their skin color to game the system as a role model. I already have my grandfather. If there is one thing that my family history has taught me, it's that I do not need a black card or an imaginary anything to make something of myself. For the record, my grandfather, now retired, lives in a home that he and my grandmother built on a plot of land they purchased in North Carolina, the very same sharecropping farm that he worked on as a small child. His story is unique. His story is beautiful. Because it's American. And that's the only card I've ever been interested in playing. I'm Candace Owens for Prager University.
Now,
thank you for watching this video. To help keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.
If only we could have those same type of donations that she's receiving coming to Brother Scotty and BTI Media Project. But I see you out there, area code 262. What's your name, where you're calling from, and what is your question or comment? I believe you have yourself muted.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can. How are you tonight?
I'm good, and yourself? Just Rob in Milwaukee, man.
How you doing, Rob? I'm still learning.
Okay, I'm good. That clip that you just played, it was very reminiscent of a book that was on the cows, The Hate You Give. It sounded exactly like the narrator that was actually giving the story. And I would say that it was a number of things incorrect about statements that she was making, but I would just stay in the question lane. And I would specifically ask her, what does she mean when she says, make something of yourself? And then I would ask her, what does she mean when she says she's an American?
Well, to begin off, those are great questions to ask her and suspected racists, because that's how you will be questioning her. If you're not familiar with her, that is, most recently, she was the woman at TMZ with Kanye West when he made the slavery was a choice quote. but I had been checking her out for a minute. You know, she been developing websites, and she's always been this kind of, I guess you would call him a right winger, talking about all of the stuff that we do and why we have problems, kind of like a not necessarily a female version of Sheriff Clark, but somewhat close. So she's always bashing us. You know what I mean? So say again.
I'm sorry. Is she non-white?
Yes, she's a black woman. She's a black woman.
Okay. I thought
Candace Parker. Yeah, Candace Parker. Check her out.
Hold on. Let me ask a question.
Again?
Is that the light skinned black female from TMZ?
No. Yeah, you're just gonna have to just Google Candace Parker. It's gonna pop up, and you'll hear a lot of stuff like that. But that's the turnaround to the previous video.
Okay.
You understand? To where you have this separation. She says that she grew up happy and she's proud of her grandfather and what have you. But for whatever reason, she doesn't acknowledge all of the troubles around everybody else who was unable to succeed because of the system of racism and or being put in slavery. We find these people who don't want to admit to this part of it, but they get paid by suspected races to continuously put that propaganda out. You know, she gets heavy donations, but none of them, but a lot of them don't look like her. That's why she goes around with, the right winger, Spencer. I can't remember. Steven Spencer, I believe that's his name. Recently, he was in the news not too long ago. But you had a question. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to add, I would also ask her, did she think her grandparents experienced racism? Well, and then, see, that would just open up a lot more questions because
right.
I would have to ask her, like, does she have a definition for racism? And, I would just really stay in the question line with her. And she sounds like a very white identified black person. And then that's all I have.
Thank you for your contribution. That is great observation. Your perception is correct. You are spot on, my friend. You are spot on. But here's the thing, is that we see a lot of those people that's not necessarily voicing their opinion in that manner. And some of us work with them on a day-to-day basis. And you wonder why it's always something, because somebody's always reporting you because you don't fit. I think the term about 5 to 6 years ago was the new black person. You don't fit that mold. And that's another one of the things that Dr. Wilf was speaking about in his book that we'll be going into this Saturday. I want to get through some more of Brother Rise's articles that he had. As it looks like we have went through them all. So, if only Brother Rise was here to give his thoughts, because I know those two videos combined gave him something totally different. I want to switch gears for a brief second. And as always, if you have a question or comment on those two videos, the articles that we went through at the beginning of the show, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. The number again is 704-802-5056. And we can hear you, sister. What is your name? Where you're calling from? What is your question or comment?
Hello.
Greetings. How are you tonight?
Hi. I was just making sure you can hear me because I'm talking through the computer. The two videos together, they kind of prove, well, not prove, they just show kind of different sides. Because when I heard the first video, I kind of thought the lady was incorrect because the way that, especially Africa, the motherland, was set, was created, you know, white people put those divisions there called Kenya, Kenya, Malawi, Malawi, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. So those tribes may be actually, may actually be different and do have some differences, but I see how she brought it together and I got her overall point. So I was like, okay. And then with the second lady, in fact, her name is Candace Owens. Let's be clear. Candace Parker played basketball and talked about how the WNBA was gay, and that's why she left. Let's make sure we get the people right and don't confuse them.
I did not know that. Thank you. I didn't know that was the same Candace Parker. I'm going to have to go check that out real quick.
No, one is Owens. Candace Owens is the lady on the video that you just played.
Right.
Candace Parker is in the WNBA. They're two totally different people. I don't know them. I just know that they are not the same.
Oh, are you saying that I said Candace Parker? My apologies. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that correction. You are correct.
I just know that they're different. And like the part with Miss Owens, I don't know, you know, VGQ, I don't know Miss Owens, you know, she's going to say what she has to say. And I'm not necessarily disagreeing with the things that she said, but it is important to work hard and all of that. And I'm glad she had a great example from her grandparents. But I would ask her, where were her parents in that example? I would ask her, you know, could her grandparents get away with not working hard as some other specifically the white culture is capable of doing? They don't have to necessarily work hard to get the things that they have. And I would ask her, because she's a, you know, no victim, no handout, what would she think about most of these farmers who are primarily white getting this new aid from President Trump when they could farm their land or do something else constructive with their land? That's what I'll ask her. Thank you.
You asked some beautiful questions. I see you, Brother Scotty. You go ahead now. I come in after you.
Well, I just want to make a statement on who Candace Parker. Now you got me saying Candace Parker. Candace Owens.
My apologies for that again.
Yeah, Candace Owens is basically playing a role. I kind of look at her as a bitter black woman. Bitter because, look, she had a case of racism against her when she was in college by, I think it was the governor's son or something like that. And she was totally to the left of where she is now. And you see how all of these white people are being filmed and recorded and people finding out who they are and then putting their information online, and then it's leading to many of them website. Getting fired or losing, you know, business and what have you. Candace Owens first proposed something like that several years ago, and she was shouted down by white liberals and quote-unquote progressives. You know how these people are with labels. But they told her, you know, because she wanted to create a database of these racist people and put them online. And they criticized her heavily for that. And then out of her own mouth, she said overnight she became a conservative. Look, you don't change your worldview overnight just like that. I think she was bitter that she wasn't getting support on the left for her project, and they were saying, like, you know, that would be unethical for her to do that, to destroy people's lives and put their information in a database and put it online. And so she took that as a rejection and ran to the other side. Ran to the other side, meaning running to the less codified racists. And she's been taught well and schooled well by those racists and what have you. So we had to understand that this woman is playing a role. She gets paid money to say the things that she says. She works for Turning Point USA, which is a conservative organization. And even one of their non-white Hispanic spokespersons that, you know, would be one of her colleagues. I don't know if he had been drinking or whatnot, but he was at a conference. And he was like praising the Nazis and stuff, telling white people, racist white people, you know, the less codified racist white people, exactly what he thought they wanted to hear. And he was talking about Jews in a derogatory manner and on saying that Hitler had it right. And so that's the crew she running with. But I think it was tragic. And I would even say she was mistreated by those on the left, by making it seem like she was doing something unethical, especially when we see it being done a lot this year for some reason, or you know, since Donald Trump was elected, that these people are being identified through these videos, and then their information, their place of business, all of that is put out. So I would take everything. I'm not saying she doesn't have valid points. The best lies to sell is when you mix them with truth. But I would take anything she says in her current state of mind with a grain of salt, because she get paid to entertain white people. If nothing but white people follow you, if the vast majority of your audience is racist, less covert racist on the right wing, then, you know, that should give you red flags as a person, a black person. Because they, you know, but yeah, I'll leave it at that. I just want to give some background on who she is and what I have read about her.
No, thank you, Scotty. You're absolutely right. And that's what I was just saying. The amount of donations, not including the job. But Brother Rob, you had something else you wanted to give before I give my response to the sister?
Oh yeah, very quickly. I looked her up online, Candace Owens. In total agreement with Brother Scotty, and greetings to you, Brother Scotty. Man, she eating, man. Thank you.
But yes, this is the counterpoint. We have this being set up on every level. Just here recently, I was trying to pull this article up. It was just Chase Bank. Let me try it one more time. Chase Bank just denied this brother for a wrongful arrest, and he actually got some money. I would say that he was owed more, but you know, circumstances are the circumstances. $160,000+, and then they would not cash his check. Well, excuse me, they would not deposit his check. Brother Scotty mentioned about the two sisters being stabbed. All of these things are happening at the same time, constantly being brutalized, and then being abused mentally, physically, by our own people. And not to say that this hasn't ever happened before, but I'm not sure if it happened on a scale to where you was able to witness every single thing. You got the view, everything with social media, the news, the internet, or being right there in the neighborhood where it happened. We getting to view everything from every aspect. And then we begin to hate on one another. And we pass that same hatred along to our children. And sometimes they do. Because like Brother Scott said, she's playing a role. I seen that where she, in one day, she became a conservative. But with all of the propaganda that's being pushed out, there are children that's growing up like that. Just a couple of years ago, you had the young Republican, the young black boy, very smart, articulate, very misguided though. And they grow up with these type of thinking points in their head. And sometimes they're able to sway other children. Now I ask everybody that's listening, what is the contradiction with a black conservative? You know, Dr. Clara Anderson said this a while back. Like, how is that an actual thing, a black conservative, when being a conservative means to continue to withhold from who? From us, from the blacks. That has been the goal from the get-go, and as many people that's coming in, all the different ethnic groups, it's still the goal right now. And some of us cheer when they get rid of the other ethnic groups, whether they've been here or they haven't. Not being aware that every time this has happened in history, it always comes back to us. And hey, I can't say that I don't understand. And when I say I don't understand, I mean just the way that you could just let everything go from a constant barrage of hate, racism at your job, at your children's sports events, at a regular coffee store. We are all complex people. The selfish part of you says, at least it ain't me. I'm glad they got somebody else. And we all have that feeling. But the responsible part of you supposed to say, nah, that don't supposed to happen to anybody, including me. But how many of us actually has that within us? Again, just honest questions. We go through so much on a regular basis. Sometimes it's something in the back of our heads to say, just think about you for now. You think about everybody else all the time. And can you blame someone for feeling that way sometimes? I mean, just being real, can you blame somebody for that? When you constantly are being mistreated. Hard questions to answer. It's always hard when you got to look at the mirror yourself. Brother Scott?
Yeah, I would like to attempt to answer your question, but let me first make sure I understand the question by restating it back to you. So, what sound like what I heard was is that when you are picked on all the time, it's hard to blame that person who's being picked on all the time, being terrorized all the time, being mistreated all the time, if they don't have empathy for other people, and you can't blame them for that. Is that sounds similar to what you just said? Or did I have it
wrong? Sounds similar, but not exactly. What I was saying is, if somebody feels that way, where they have been, because everybody's going to do what they're going to do, can you blame them for having that thought? Now, proceeding with that action is different. What I was saying is that can you blame somebody when they have constantly been kicked on by whoever? Our own people, the oppressors, the many oppressors, which will be like the Arabs and the Chinese and what have you. You know, white supremacy is still supreme as far as this world is concerned right now. So all of those people and our people when they just want to give up. What I'm saying is that you can't blame them for that thought passing by their across their head. Now, what actions they do, that's when you hold them accountable. But that was the statement that I was making.
To give up? Does that make sense? You can't blame them for wanting to give up.
Yeah, that would come across their mind.
Oh yeah, I had those questions enter into my own mind, or those feelings. You know, 10 years I've been doing Black Talk Radio network, and sometimes I wonder what's it all for. You know, and do I want to continue?
I do.
Considering the lack of support from the Black community, so you know, but I continue on. So no, I don't blame anybody. You know, we live in a very depressing world, and you know, when you live in a constant state of depression, you know what I'm saying, you're gonna have those thoughts. So no, you can't blame anybody for wanting to give up. But then I look into the face of my children and my grandchildren, and I'm not doing it for me. I'm doing it for them.
I understand completely. And that's why I wanted to break the answer to your question. It's exactly what I meant when I was saying that, because like you, I have also, you know, and it's not just the radio or what have you. You know, we all live our own lives. And one thing that I believe everybody, some people can control it, some people can't, but we all judge. And it's always better to judge somebody else about what you see them doing than to have to judge yourself. Part of the reason why I think social media is so large in the first place, because you can look at everybody else's faults and talk about them and forget about yours for a few minutes. I don't know, man. The more I think about it, I'm kind of leaning towards Roz with this mental illness, because that's what we have begun to make out of it. It could be a beautiful thing, but we tend to misuse it, and we continue to add on to the problems that we have as a Black community. The first video, everything that she done, playing to the stereotypes, but in a different manner, as a way to combine and show the commonality of the people. Same things that some of my friends from Africa and Europe that I've met over the years, the same indoctrination they get when they hit it this way. You know, you got to be careful about those African Americans. And, you know, like Brother Scott has said, everything has a bit of truth in it, and that's how you tell the best lie. Because we do. We have to watch each other. We do. But it's not because we're Black. Just people. You have nasty, horrendous, low-down people in this world, and they could get you at any moment. And they look like everybody because they come from all walks of life. All colors of the spectrum, just low down people. But to specify as looking for those African Americans, the people that look like you when you coming over here, again, separating the divide. And I know that, and I see you, Brother Rob, we're gonna come to you after the break, but I know Brother Roz would have loved to be into this, because he had a friend that died. Me and Brother Scotty were just going, having a small discussion about the mental state of being able to deal with those thoughts. He had a friend that died from that, and he was a software developer, and he learned how to build a software based off of the African stories that Brother Ross was telling him. Interesting story. he'll have to tell that himself in full detail. But right now, you are listening to Real Life the Radio Show. I am your host, Jenna Kepri. We'll be right back after this quick commercial.
Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
I'm starting to think, Brother Scotty, every time you played some of that old music, man, I feel better. I'm thinking I might have to change my playlist around. Welcome back to Real Life with your host, Jenna Kepri. Go ahead, Brother Scotty. After Brother Scotty, we're going to come right on to you, Brother
Rob. No, I was just going to say, you know, music is therapy, man. It's no doubt in my mind about that. You know, I always have listened to music all my life, grew up around music with my stepdad being a DJ, and, you know, I would get to go out with him to the cabaret set up and every once in a while, he might let me get up on the turntable. So music has always been a big part of my life. Very musical family, although I don't have any musical talents. But listen, man, I was feeling real, real, real depressed this month. And then I realized, what has happened? What am I doing different? Why am I feeling especially depressed this month for some reason? And I wasn't listening to my music, my daily music, man, you know? And so I'm making it a point that I'm going to at least listen to an hour of music every day. Maybe not 1 hour straight, but, you know, where I have those melodies in my mind as opposed to all of these stories about oppression. So that's all I just wanted to say. You know, music does can make you feel better.
Hey, it's a universal language. The only one I know of outside of math. Brother Rob, go ahead. Your mic is open.
So I'm just kind of going with the flow right now. I'm going to piggyback off of Scotty's last comment and share a paragraph out of my literature book, and the chapter is poetry, titled "Song," and it says,
"Brother Rob,
yes, sir."
Brother Rob, before you start, you say out of your literature book, is this a book that you're writing?
No, sir. This is a course that I'm taking.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yes, thank you.
Poetry is the oldest form of literature, the primal form of human expression. Poetry predates history itself because it not only existed but flourished before the invention of writing. Ancient poetry was an oral and performative art. In pre-literature societies, it was sung or chanted before a live audience, a situation not unlike a hip-hop club performance to what today. Poetic song was humanity's first broadcast technology, a technology performed by the human body. It was the way early cultures remembered and celebrated their history and legends. And thank you.
Yeah. Oral traditions, where myths come from, what you're talking about right now. That is nice. Thank you for that. First and foremost, thank you for all of y'all who have chimed in with your thoughts, questions, and statements, because this is our show. You know, I had read a couple of the comments here recently, and I got some doozies. A lot of beautiful people talking about the separation that goes on right now. You find it even in the comments of something that's trying to be done for somebody else. It's so many sections, so many things that makes us different. But there's one very solid reason to come together, no matter what you think about. And that's ending this system of slavery, racism, white supremacy. But yet we continue to let the smallest things separate us. Brother Rod was just talking about poetry. Maybe the earliest form of MCing, from the way that he described it, that was very detailed. I could see that happening. And then we go to what Brother Scotty was talking about as far as the music and how I felt when I hear some of that old school music that my mother used to play when I was younger. Then you think forward to what's going on in the world today when you cut the radio on. All of these different things that separate us, make us angry. Early in the program, I was talking about how you see that grill from other people that look like you. But you also happen to notice that right after they grilled you, they greeted that white person with such a big heart, and then turn around and look at you crazy after they finished talking to them. Or maybe in reverse, you got away from that little instant headache and then went to go see another black person at the cash register, greet the white person in front of you with great intent, and then attempt to abuse you. Small things that we could pick up on. Sometimes when I run into these particular situations, I just smile before it even start. Just smile. How you doing, sir? How you doing, ma'am? One of the things I think that we don't do enough is that we don't break the ice. We're so used to being abused, like I was telling Brother Scotty, that we be waiting for somebody else to do it for us, to smile at us, to hold the door for us. Sometimes we have to take that initiative and do it for somebody else. Feels amazing. Feels amazing every time I do it. Euphoric, almost. Just to see somebody else who may have been having a great day, but when they seen you, it just black clouded. But when you speak to them with some respect, they so shocked that they can't hold a smile in, even if they wanted to be mad. The energy just changes. These are the reasons Brother Rise wanted to play these clips. Just so we could get into that discussion. We heard a lot of stuff. We heard a lot of examples in both of those clips. I see you, Brother Rob. I'm going to be with you in just here in a second. We've seen a lot of examples, but we didn't get that many solutions. Well, in the first video, she gave a few, but these are some simple solutions that we can do at home right now. You could even do it to your spouse, to your mother, if they having a bad day, or y'all having a bad conversation or moment, I should say. Just smile at them. Especially if they your loved one, tell them you love them. For no reason, just because. Things like this work wonders, and we should do them more often. Brother Rob.
Yes, sir. I was just going to add to what you were saying as far as being nice, being more warm, more receptive. Something that I've added to yes, sir, and no, sir, yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, to anybody and everybody. And what I found is that has allowed me to just be nicer when I'm talking to people, and when I know that I'm going to respond like that, it kind of settles me down a little bit, man, when I be on edge.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yes, sir.
Now, when you started doing that, have you ever experienced any of those emotions that I was just speaking of, when you get the response from your brother or your sister, even though you know they looking at you with the intent that we be having? It may not be to hurt you, but you know, it's to shy you away. And when they change the way that they respond, does that make you feel good, my brother?
Yes, sir. I think you hit it exactly on the head with that. But that's the only thing that I wanted to add, though. Thank you.
No, thank you. You have been a big contribution tonight, because I know Brother Rise, he was ready. And when I say ready, we had discussed this particular issue, and he had quite a bit that he wanted to add. I hate that he was not here. But interesting conversations from everybody involved. The thing is that we are such a small minority within our community, and we let the smallest things rip away from those people. It's so much going on, and we can't even keep focus on what we need to do to fix the problem. Me and Roz was talking the other day, and I was telling him that a lot of times we fix the symptoms, whether it be because we don't have enough time, because we have to work all of the time, we have children alongside of that job, don't have no relationship problems. Now that's you just, that could continuously add on. And we just don't have time to sit back and be nice. Again, it goes back to that open question that I had that Brother Scotty was going to attempt to answer. Can you be mad at somebody for having that constant barrage of negative energy to let that pass through their head? Again, it's not to excuse anything that they do, but these things happen. We all hit our slumps. Some of us act out in our slumps. I'm raising my hand. I'm one of those people. I'm not going to attack no other black people. Hopefully I'm not attacking no suspected races either. Can't afford that time. But we act out in different ways. These things happen. We all have to figure out how to do these things ourselves. But we have to notice them. That's the first thing. Because if you're doing something for a reason that you don't know why you're acting out, you're headed towards a road of destruction. And now you are on a full course. Excuse me, a full course. You are on a speed path to slavery, racism, white supremacy. And we could still be fighting for you, and you could still be fighting the system as well. But it's just a little bit easier to fight the system without them having a watch over your every move. You can help yourself, you can help your family, you can help us. Everybody that's listening right now could help Brother Scotty doing what he's doing. All of these things is needed. It's a lot of y'all out there asking a question in your mind right now. What can I do to help? BTI community. That will help. Black Talk Media. That'll help. They both have donation buttons. Another side of that I wanted to get into is it's the people that say these things just to get a rise out of somebody else, and they be stealing their energy. We have to be careful about dealing with those people also, because we have energy vampires all over the place. Some of them may live in your home. They may be your children, your sisters, your brothers, your parents, friends. We just have to be more aware of our surroundings. We have such a huge task that we have to tackle. And it may not happen in my lifetime. I'm not saying it's not. But what I do is I infuse the culture into my children to be aware of this. So even if it doesn't stop, they're constantly being prepared. Like I said earlier, we all have our own number of when our children stop being children, because now they have to function by thinking about these things when they run into these suspected races out on the street or out on a soccer field, on the basketball court. They look at things different than other children, speaking of mine in particular. So they see things that happen that other children don't see. You know, the kind of things like my children play soccer. So it's an overwhelming majority of white people that play soccer, at least in the town where I'm at. So they notice when the other little black girls or the little black boys with the afros or with the afro puffs and just showing their natural glory, they get patted on the head. Small things that other children probably don't notice, but we put that in their heads. That way they understand what's happening, and these are small things that they could look for. It could be too early for your child to start looking for those type of things. But then you could come in, and just right after I just said this, you could think back of when your child was being practiced on and was okay with it. Depends on you, on which end you wanna be on. Are you gonna let them maneuver on from that point? And at a certain age, you will tell them this is what's going on and that's what you look for? Or do you tell them right then? Brother Rob, we got you back again. What's going on, brother?
Man, I had to chime in. Your last comment just reiterated the question that you proposed earlier, which was, is it ever too early to talk to your offspring about racism, white supremacy? And, man, just using the current event, they're separating babies from their mothers at the so-called borders, putting babies in cages. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? And so,
yes, sir.
Like they say, you know, that you should start communicating with the child in the womb. I think you start right there. And then just going back in, you know, past, you had a person by the name of King Leopold.
King of Belgium.
I mean, so no, I don't think it's ever too early. No, sir.
Well, I'm glad that you have enjoyed the show enough that it made you think. Because see, these type of conversations will dictate how you react and interact with your family. If you don't have any children, you know, small things you could tell your nieces or your nephews, your younger cousins. You know, so that's what we are here for. Hopefully, we have provided y'all with some constructive information. And thank y'all, everyone, for chiming in. We duly appreciate that. And for everybody in the comments, keep those comments coming. We will try to adhere to some of those that are reasonable. And we'll continue to add those type of insights into the program. With that being said, I don't know the prayer by heart that Brother Rice would shoot out, but if you would, Brother Scotty, this was Real Life the Radio Show. Thank y'all for being with us this Tuesday evening. Once again, hope we had constructive information for you, and hopefully we'll be able to see y'all this coming Saturday at noon to interview Dr. Wiff. With that being said, peace. Y'all have a great week.
What up, son?
What's good, Dad?
Billie Holiday said a long time ago, no two people on earth are alike, and it's got to be the same way in music. Otherwise, it isn't music. Always remember, never follow the crowd. I have something important to tell you, and I'm gonna let you know
what it is.